Hello, this is David Kortz with Sonoma Cider, and I'm from Healdsburg in the northern part of California, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 7. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. This is Aria Wincaller, your cider MC. And this week we have a fantastic chat with a cider maker from California. So if you're feeling a little chilly, well, we're going to go where the sun is always shining in a moment. But before we do, I wanted to thank Rick Thompson, who's a new listener to Cider Chat. And he wrote me an email, which just made my day. Thank you so much, Rick. And I'm not going to read all of it, but I just want to read the part that made me smile, and I hope it makes you smile too. He goes, I recently began listening to Cider Chat when I found myself on the road for a couple dozen hours over the past few weeks, and I've been enjoying it immensely. Thank you so much for producing such an entertaining, educational, and high production quality show! Exclamation point. I've been diving pretty heavily into the craft beer world over the past year, but only recently started getting into cider. Unfortunately, there's very little to try where I live in South Florida. Well, Rick, I just want to say the cider maker that we're speaking to today, actually, he calls himself a cider master, which is a pretty cool term, and we'll talk about that, is Sonoma Cider, and they are available in Florida. I'm not sure South Florida, but I wouldn't be surprised. So maybe you could ask your local store where you get your excellent libations and see if they could get Sonoma Cider because it's available in Florida. So that's a cool thing. And thank you so much for saying such nice words. It really means a lot to me. Again, it made my day. So Rick had some other questions. I'll be getting to in subsequent shows. He had some great ideas, and I just appreciated him taking the time for that. Meanwhile, we're going to get on with our chat. At the end of the show, we'll talk about the next week episode and a little bit more in between. Meanwhile, I think it's time now to grab a glass and join the chat with David Kortz of Sonoma Cider.
Welcome, David, to Cider Chat. I'm so glad you can make it. And you had your trip out to California all the way here on the East Coast. So it's a perfect opportunity to speak with you. And this podcast will go live around the world. And people are really curious what's happening with California ciders, what you're doing. I know you have a couple different hats that you're wearing, and you're really integral to cider as it's moving forward in the U.S. So I want to talk about all that. And if you could, why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners and let them know your background a little bit, what hat you're currently wearing at Sonoma Cider, and we'll start from there.
Sounds good. Well, thanks, Rhea, for talking to me. This is a lot of fun. I'm excited to be here in Providence, Rhode Island for this festival. And I'm the CEO and cider master for Sonoma Cider. Yeah, I was a commercial winemaker for 20 years. I was the first commercial cider maker in California in about 1992. But did a few other things between then and now, and started Sonoma Cider in 2013.
Nice.
And so we're making some really fun craft ciders and selling them around the country.
And it's an organic cider that you're making, which is a pretty nice label to have out there.
Yeah. It's. I think we're the like. One of the very few that are a whole line of ciders are all organically certified, you know, through CCOF in California.
And so those apples that you're using are all from California, or are they out of state too? Or are you pressing out of state and then transporting?
Yeah, we get some of our fruit from Sonoma County, California, and the Gravenstein apple came from that area. And so there's still some orchards. Not all of it's been planted to Pinot Noir. And and we get the rest of it from the Yakima Valley in Washington State.
Yeah, big producer of apples, no doubt. Now, there was recently that awful fire out in Middletown, California. And that must have been really close to home.
Very close. We could see the flames from in the mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was, I think, 1,000 homes burned.
Yeah.
But it was not, it burned a few wineries too, but didn't really affect the apples or the pears in our region.
Oh, that's good, because I imagine all the smoke and all that critical kind of time of harvest could really be a concern. But
It was a bad one.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're on the other side of that and hope that's good recovery for everyone. So let's talk about Sonoma Cider and a little bit about your production. Like, you're available on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Certainly you could go to many good, what we call package stores. What do they call in California? Even though my family's all from California, I'm trying to think, what are they called in California where you'd get cider?
Well,
we call them packies.
Package stores. I mean, that's
package
sort
stores?
Of a term that's used inside the business. But,
right.
You know, I'm in grocery stores or off-premise accounts. You know, I mean, I've heard people call them package stores. It makes sense to me.
Yeah. So here you are. You start, you know, Sonoma Cider's kicking out this amazing cider, and it's coming all the way to the East Coast. That's a lot of cider to make. What is the production, you know, that you're putting on right now?
Well, our first year we sold about 60,000 cases, and our second year, I think, which is this year, will get us at about 120,000 cases.
Nice.
So we're bigger than some and smaller than the big guys, and kind of in the middle there, and making, you know, we've sort of selected the organic fruit because we weren't able to source enough cider apples, you know, the heirloom apples in our area.
Right.
We're still working on that and trying to do that. But we felt like to build a brand that we wanted to distribute like we are, we needed to find a good source of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And my past experience had told me that organic fruit was way better than conventionally grown fruit. And so, the plant itself, the tree, has to work that much harder to produce the fruit. Mm-hmm. It produces a smaller, more flavorful, more tasty product. And so, short of getting the heirloom fruit, which I originally really wanted, and found out that there just wasn't enough of it around yet.
Not yet, right? Good
word to use. Yes, I went with the organic option, and I'm really pleased with the way that's working out.
Nice. And how are you pressing it? You know, that's a lot of juice to have, and then the sweet cider. What is it? What's the operation there, the pressing that you're using? What kind of cider press?
So we have a couple of small presses that we use for local fruit, but the rest of the fruit that comes out of the Yakima Valley, we press there with our partner in Yakima.
Mm-hmm.
And they use a hydraulic table press.
Okay. Yeah, because there's some, you know, that's, since the cider is just, the growth is so exponential each year, and people are still, you know, coming in just like the craft beer market, growing. It's always kind of curious on what do people like, and do they like those types of presses? And
mm-hmm.
there's that classic kind of hydraulic press where it's poured into the different, like the cheesecloth, essentially, and then stacked, and that works for you.
Yeah, well, and we also have a small tank press.
Okay.
So, you know, which is commonly used in the wine business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a bladder on the inside, and the actual apples go into the inside of the bladder, and then it fills with air, and you can press it very lightly or very heavy and
mm-hmm.
do whatever you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gives you a lot of flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I find that works pretty well. It kind of encloses it, so it doesn't have a tendency to squirt out and go everywhere like apples can.
Don't want to waste that juice.
No.
Not that precious liquid.
Exactly.
And when you're doing the fermentation, you do barrels, and of course you're probably transporting that down in like plastic containers, and then it's going into stainless steel. Is that?
Yeah, we bring it down in stainless steel, and then we transport it, you know, we pump it from there into
mm-hmm.
our tanks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's usually very, very cold when we get it, so we warm it up to get it so that it's a nice, friendly environment for the yeast.
Mm-hmm.
We have a proprietary organic yeast strain that we've selected from about 40 different yeast strains that we originally looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And we inoculate the juice once it reaches temperature with the culture, you know, so we grow the yeast in the small containers. Usually my preferred method is to put it in the sun, but if it's cold outside, you can't get away with that. But
there has to be plenty of sun in California. You can't hide that.
Exactly.
When isn't it a beautiful sunny day?
There's a couple of them, but it's pretty good weather. So we put the yeast in, and then we ferment it slowly at a cold temperature, you know, 62, something like that, between 57 and 62 degrees for about 3 or 4 weeks.
And are you making cider all year long, or is the fall your crank out time?
We're making cider all year long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One of the things I love about apples is that, you know, many of them do well in cold storage.
Absolutely.
And so unlike grapes that you have to pick and produce immediately or mm-hmm. they start to deteriorate and you know, break down, apples, many of them, can be held in cold storage. You can pull them out and make your fresh juice right on the spot mm-hmm. so that when a bottle of our Sonoma cider comes off the line, it was an apple 30 days ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that.
That's really great. That's really great. And you were full-time winemaking. So I want to talk about that because a grape is not an apple. I mean, it's like apples to oranges. They're fruits, but they have two different properties, at least in my mind. And I'd like to just hear your side of it, how you see it. What did you take from your winemaking that you're bringing forward into your cider making?
Oh, a lot of things. You know, all the way from, you know, good practices, from, you know, keeping the facility clean and...
Well, let's back up a little bit. In the orchard, in the mm-hmm. vineyard, the vintner, the winemaker, goes out and is tasting the grapes. So does David go out to Yakima County and in Sonoma, and do you always have an apple in your hand, or how do you do that?
Definitely, that's totally my style. I mean, I didn't make wine by the numbers, and I don't make cider by the numbers. I go out and I, you know, look at the orchard and I taste the fruit, and you know, sure, I check the bricks, and you know, I check the pH to make sure I'm you know what I'm sensing is accurate, and then I track it, and you know, I kind of use my, you know, intuition to decide when I want to pick the mm-hmm. fruit, and I did that when I was making wine, and it was always good for me. So mm-hmm. that's kind of what we do. You know, I think that you can't use a formula on all of these things. Different fruit. You know, some fruit needs to be picked early. It needs a better acid backbone to it. You know, there's all kinds of different components that come together depending mm-hmm. on the characteristics of the particular varietal.
Absolutely. And so with that, when you are out in the field and looking at that apple, I'm wondering, on the East Coast or on the... You know, California is renowned for wines and really came into that market and kind of blew the Europeans away. We all know that kind of... that fun story. How's the acid on the apples? What do you find for the classic acid level that when you're making the cider? There's a lot of American ciders that are high in acid versus the European ciders. You see that really dropping out. Hmm. So how do you work with that? And are you going for that in your cider? Or?
It depends on the cider. You know, it depends on the apple. We made, for instance... I have a friend that has a little winery down the road. We're right in the little town of Healdsburg, so there's about 200 wineries within 15 minutes of the town.
How do they like that? What do the wineries feel about?
They like it.
They do? Okay.
They like it. They don't see it as competition. They're sort of like, oh, this is great. You know, this is something very different.
Good.
But the little winery down the road called De La Montaña Winery, and they have a beautiful vineyard, and they have a small winery where they make wonderful wines. Mm. But it's surrounded... with apple trees. The entire vineyard is enclosed by apple trees. It's kind of unusual. And they were all Golden Delicious. And so he was like, oh, well, you know, we have all these apples, and if you want them, just come and get them. And I said, well, what are they? And he said, Golden Delicious. And I went, you know, I don't know about that one. And I wasn't sure.
You should try West County's Golden Delicious.
Well, you know what? Yeah. And so I had this preconceived attitude about it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they were free. And so I went and we picked them, and we made cider out of it. They had, they were, you know, what you might consider to be green. They were not super sweet. They were about between 11 and 12 bricks. They had higher acid. And it wound up making a delicious cider. In fact, it's the preferred cider that we make by all of the guys that work on the bottling line. after work, they have our Golden Delicious. And it just made what we call our session cider, because we don't even sell it anywhere else. We only sell it, at the facility. So it really, really made a wonderful cider. And it was, you know, very different than what you might think would make a great cider. So,
is that a cider that you're making every year now?
We make it every year, yeah.
But you could only get it at your tasting room?
That's correct.
Okay.
And, we have a little tiny tasting room in our facility. We're building a really nice tap room that'll be open after the first of the year. We're really excited about it. Yeah.
Good. Great.
Yeah. So that's sort of, I don't know if I really answered your question about the acid, but it just really depends on the fruit and what you're trying to create.
Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine your skill in winemaking must have really helped working with those variations, because that's something that can really impact the flavor, you know, managing the acid, doing that well, getting that balance so that you get that nice tartness, yet not having it overwhelm the palate is really, I think, it takes skill.
Rhea, I know you make cider, and you know, I've been fermenting stuff for, 42 years now, and I find that the key is balance. So, and the balance doesn't always mean the same thing with different fruit, but you can find that happy place, you know, with whatever you're working with. Mm-hmm. If you can find that, then it's going to please people, and that's really what we're trying to do.
So let's talk about some of your ciders. And as I mentioned, I brought the Anvil cider when I was going overseas to some European cider makers and importers, and that was really fun for them to taste it, because that's aged in a bourbon barrel, correct?
It is not.
It is not.
It is not.
Is that bourbon chips or what?
No, it's not.
Am I describing the wrong cider? Help me, David.
Throw you a line. What we did was originally we were naive enough to think that you could add bourbon to the cider. And then we found out there's about 5 federal laws that prohibit that. So we were like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
So we actually had a cider made for us. A bourbon made for us. We had a bourbon made for us. And we took the bourbon, and I had the idea from my past formulation days and working for other brands to take the bourbon and put it in a vacuum distillation unit.
Oh, interesting.
And when something is under a vacuum and it's heated, it will boil or convert to a gas at a super low temperature. Like bourbon would start to convert to a gas at 110 degrees if it's under enough of a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And so by doing that, the first thing, the most volatile aspect of it is the alcohol. And so it goes off as a gas. It's, you know, like when you're boiling water, you see the steam rising from the pot. Same thing happens here, except it's under a vacuum. And so the alcohol rises up in through the column. And as soon as it rises, we shut it off. And everything that's left, we add back to the hard apple base. And so you get the kind of the cool components of the smokiness and so forth of the bourbon, but none of that nasty illegal alcohol that the federal government doesn't want us to put in there.
I do want to talk about the Cider Act and all. I want to get to that, and I know that you're involved in that, but that's really a cool process that you're doing, and it's a lovely cider. I think classically, a lot of Americans making cider, you know, my grandfather and all those folks and way back were putting it in the bourbon barrels or adding different spirits to it. And I always kind of blame cider for prohibition a little bit, because it just makes people so crazy. But it's a lovely, the overtures of it's really lovely. And I think that it excites people when they get to have that, the bourbon is just a fun word in general. It's kind of a cozy word. But the taste profile is really fun. What would you consider, well, I could kind of guess, but I'd like to hear from you. People come in the tasting room and they're new to cider. What are you saying? Hey, try this one first. Because that happens in the wine world as it does in the beer world. So from your vantage.
Well, I would say that we usually talk to people a little bit and try and find out where they're coming from. Some people want things that are a little bit sweeter, and although we really don't make any sweet ciders, we do have a few that are off dry. And so we felt like that was sort of a, something that some of the bigger cider companies perhaps are missing. Their products, most of them tend to be pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. And I think that the consumer is not really looking for that necessarily. I don't think the millennials are looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who we think are driving the cider category are the millennials. Mm-hmm. So we talk to people that come in. We find out what their preferences are. We try to determine what they want. If they don't know, then we just start them off with our apple, and which we call the hatchet,
mm-hmm.
and we work them through our lineup.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if you don't mind, I'd love to go back. You were talking about bourbon barrels.
Yes, please.
We're coming out with a product that we're calling the Imperial. And
that's so funny that you mentioned that, because I was just on Twitter, and somebody said, what's the next one? Hops. I'm like, oh, hops is already done. And I said, Imperial. That Imperial cider is going to be it.
Totally.
That's so funny.
Totally. And you know what?
I love that.
And this is, I got to tell you what we're doing. We're really, really excited about it. So we took our regular blend, our proprietary blend of apples that we use that are all organic, fermented them completely dry.
Mm-hmm.
No sweetness left in it.
Mm-hmm.
None of our ciders have any sugar added. There's no concentrates. There's no sulfites. There's no potassium sorbate. There's none of that stuff. But they're organically certified. So anyway, so we take the base, ferment it completely dry, and then, oh no, wait a minute, what am I talking about?
It's okay.
We take the juice, and we add brown sugar to it. Organic, very, very dark brown sugar, and then we ferment it in whiskey barrels.
So this is the only one that you're adding sugar to?
We add brown sugar to it. It's the only one we've ever done that to.
Nice color.
And it's pretty awesome, actually. But what we wanted to do, since it's an Imperial, right,
mm-hmm.
we wanted it to be higher in alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you have to have more sugar that's naturally present in the apple.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to just add, cane sugar, so we wanted to add something with a little more character.
Delicious.
We found a really amazing, deep, deep, dark, organic brown sugar that we added to the apple base, fermented in whiskey barrels, we ferment it dry, and then it ages for about 3 months in the same whiskey barrels. And it's 12.3% alcohol.
Wow.
And it's got this beautiful golden rich color to it. Thick, kind of a little viscous,
mm-hmm.
A little more.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have that clear acid backbone that you get in a lot of ciders, which I love.
Right.
This is just a different road that we took.
Not hot or anything like that?
No hotness to it.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of a smooth richness.
Right.
It's rich, but not hot.
Right. And I just want to say to listeners who aren't really informed, so I just asked that to David, because that sometimes a lot of high alcohol will be very hot on the tongue. And I'm sure that yours aren't, but you just want to kind of check that. So is it actually what's the name of it?
Imperial.
Just Imperial.
Sonoma Cider Imperial.
Imperial. Okay, great.
It's part of our cider maker reserve line.
Okay.
So we have the reserves are in bigger bottles. Mm-hmm. They're in the 22 ounce. They have a special packaging. Mm-hmm. They're individually numbered and signed.
Are they in paper?
They've got the paper wrap, like a Lee and Perrin wrap that you get on the sauces. We have the same kind of a brown craft wrap that we put on the bottles.
Beautiful.
And so
that's... How about availability? We're good folks.
A lot of amazing distributors that are our partners in different markets, and we have about 12 key markets that we are partnering with. We sell in more than that, but we have, those are sort of our key markets. And so, Boston is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Florida is a key market for us. Obviously, California, but so is Seattle, Chicago.
Big market in Florida.
Yeah. You know why? Guess.
Well, let's see. The culture of people who are there, they're really enlightened cider drinkers.
Well, of course, anybody who drinks cider is enlightened. But, it's the British influence. Because there are a lot of, people that move from England to Florida.
No kidding.
And so, it started out with a lot of Irish and English pubs.
I was going to be thinking Latino.
But there's a pretty big, UK population
that
has, moved there and are living there, and they really, that's kind of what it got going. But of course, it also is a perfect climate for it. The foods are great with cider. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of other things mm-hmm. that contribute to why we're doing well there. Mm-hmm. But that's what's going on there in Florida.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. So the Imperial is something to look for, and I imagine you're probably not going to just do that a one-shot deal. Folks don't get it this year, then we might see it again, or you're always kind of changing it up a little bit, aren't you?
Well, we have, this is the way we're doing it. We're making things that we like, so we're selfish, and we're experimenting all the time. I mean, Robert's working on my son Robert mm-hmm. has been working with me since he was 14, he's now 30, and so we make the ciders together, and he's working on a banana cider. I mean, there is no sacred ground. Everything mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. open. And so what we do is when we come out with a reserve or we come out with what we call our limited runs, which are mm-hmm. in the little bottles in the four packs, but they're mm-hmm. a little bit more expensive than our regular guys, mm-hmm. We wait and see what people say. We mm-hmm. we want to see, is mm-hmm. this something that's really worth doing again? Was it fun mm-hmm. doing it once? Mm-hmm. Do we want to do it again? Are we going to make it a regular thing?
Right.
And do we want to do it regularly once a year? Do we want to add it to our core lineup? Those are all things. We're a pretty new company, so we're really paying attention to what everybody says and what the feedback we get over social media and all of that.
Sure. You should let Robert know that I've made many banana ciders. In fact,
really?
When I do cider making demos, which I did for 16 years at Cider Days, I would love to do that because what I love about cider is you could do anything with it. You could put cayenne in it. You could do anything. And so there's nothing better to demonstrate that than having somebody peel a banana and pop it right in the carboy. And that with a blueberry, mm-hmm. really nice kind of blend for cider. So
that sounds good.
The apple is just it's that amazing fruit, isn't it, that mm-hmm. just opens up doors. So I'm excited. I can't wait to try the banana.
And, we've made habanero lime with coriander in it. We put that in cans. Mm-hmm. That was part of our limited mm-hmm. run series. Mm-hmm. And so it was only available for a few months. And that was really, really popular on the East Coast. So it did really well in Boston. It did great in D.C. and Florida. Mm. And, it was okay in California, but people seemed to really like it on the East Coast.
You're talking millennials, too. Boston's a huge college town.
Yeah.
So...
And we pressed 200 pounds of habanero peppers, seeds and all, to make the juice from it, and then added it back to the apple base. It was intense experience pressing habaneros.
But everybody wear like goggles
and a mask,
and don't touch your eyes.
Exactly.
And go through like a sanitation.
Gloves up to your elbows. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yikes!
But that's that's the kind of thing that we like doing. It keeps. We think that it keeps us kind of fresh and interested and innovative and making fun things. So.
That's something that's interesting with the craft beer and the millennials and just the way the markets are going that I see, that some people are embracing as yourself, but some get a little grumpy about, that what we see in the market is the aficionado, the cider drinker, the libations drinker, always wants something new. And for craft beer to do that, they have to sometimes do product review like 6 months out. For cider, what do you think? Sounds like it's pretty easy for you to kind of turn that around and go with it because you're not doing just one fermentation. You're able to make cider year round and do small batches. Are you doing what's a small experimental batch size?
500 gallons.
500 gallons.
Yeah. So. We have 3 500-gallon stainless steel fermenters that mm-hmm. we use for small batch stuff. But in the lab, we're doing 5 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we start.
Mm-hmm.
And so Robert and I will work on a little tiny batch and see, this has potential. And then we'll step it up goes from there. But
can you give me an idea of the size of your facility then?
Is it Willy Wonka's
it's cider?
It's 6,000 square feet.
Okay.
So it's
ceiling height?
25 feet.
25 feet, okay.
Yeah, so we have it pretty full with fermentation tanks.
And the
and our bottling line.
And what's the average size of your, the conical fermentation, right?
We use wine fermenters, stainless steel wine, jacketed stainless steel wine fermenters.
Okay.
They range anywhere from 2,000 gallons up to 9,000 gallon stainless steel tanks.
Okay.
And then we have the small 500 gallon.
Mm-hmm.
The all of our ciders are batched at the 500-gallon level. So we don't batch anything bigger than that. We have bigger fermentation tanks because it's more effective. It's actually I don't know what the term is, but basically it's a more efficient way to ferment for us in the larger tanks. But then when we go to blend, we only blend in 500-gallon tanks. We like the smaller blends.
Nice, nice. And so that then lends itself to be able to do that experimental piece and really keep on working with the public's palate in that way, which is sweet.
For sure.
Great.
Let's take a little pause here before David starts speaking about the U.S. Cider Maker Association and the Cider Certification Program. I'd like to encourage you to subscribe to Cider Chat via iTunes or Stitcher Radio. And that's a great way to make sure that you don't miss any of the upcoming podcasts or past episodes from cider makers and cider enthusiasts around the world. I just got a little tip that I'm going to get to speak to John Bunker probably in January, and that is an episode you do not want to miss. This guy is, he's a dude in terms of apple identification, and I know it's going to be an amazing show. So there's lots of folks that I am set and slated to speak to, an amazing cider info coming up and all about apples. So subscribe today and don't miss the chat. Now we'll get back to David Kortz of Sonoma Cider. This is Episode 7.
So let's talk a little bit about the U.S. Association of Cider Makers, can we?
Yeah.
You're on the board?
I am.
That's a new association, 2013-2, is that correct?
Yeah.
And they host CiderCon out in on the West Coast.
Well, no, it's been every year it's been
Chicago.
But this is the first year, 2016, in February of 2016, it'll be hosted in Portland for the first time.
In February, right. And so how about giving listeners who don't know, because again, this is going out, around the world, anyone can listen to it, a little bit about the goal of this association, because it is a membership base where you could join if you're a cider maker. There's different levels. If you're a homebrew cider maker, you're making out of your home, they could also join too, correct?
That's correct.
And also working on the Cider Act. Can you talk about the Cider Act?
Of course. Well, first of all, the association is basically was formed to serve cider makers across the country. There was, up until that point, there was really no formal association. There were some regional folks, Michigan and Seattle and, Pacific Northwest and so forth. But there was no national association. And so we came together, and it's a group of, people that are orchardists and cider makers, and they can be home cider makers. They're mainly populated by people that are doing it commercially. So it's a fantastic organization. I was excited to be selected to be on the board. As far as the Cider Act goes, the Cider Act is something that we're working hard on as an association. It is basically trying to set right some of the bizarre laws that are hangovers from Prohibition in this country. Two in particular are the alcohol content. I mean, the truth is that when you take a cider apple and you crush and press it and then you ferment it, it generates a higher alcohol content than currently is allowed under the cider tax. So anything over 7% is taxed at a much higher rate, at the wine tax. And yet when you ferment apple juice, it's more than that. It's more like 8. That's just kind of a weird law that they kind of, I think, jimmied around based on what was happening in the wine industry and sort of fruit wines, and it kind of came out of the Prohibition. And so we're looking to correct that and raise the standard cider alcohol. I believe it goes to 8.5% in the act.
So that imperial cider that you're talking about is...
It would fall under the wine tax.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it would be taxed at a much higher rate.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's going to have to cost a little more to the consumer. But for other ciders, you know, the majority of cider made in the United States, in fact, in the world, it really would be better for everyone, for the consumer, the producers, the growers, and everyone, to be able to have an alcohol content that perhaps didn't exceed 8.5% and receive the lower tax rate. The other thing, one of the other key components to this act is, believe it or not, cider is taxed according to its carbonation.
Yes.
How many bubbles are in it?
Right.
And it's called, they even refer to it as the bubble tax. And so without getting into all of the technical jargon about how much carbon dioxide is present to get a higher tax, if you go over a certain carbonation level, the tax goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It goes way up. It goes to from like 20 cents a gallon to $3.50 a gallon.
Right, right.
And so it's a lot of tax, and it's very difficult for small producers to really regulate that.
Mm-hmm.
And especially to nail it, I mean, what they're asking people to do is really unreasonable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think pretty much everybody that I've ever spoken to, including congressmen that I spoke to in Washington, D.C. when we made a little trip there, everybody kind of like shakes their head and goes, yeah, that's sort of silly. You know, we got to change that. And so those are the two real big components. And, you know, and also adding pear. Adding Perry to be able to be included as part of that lower cider tax.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I know in Alaska, the brewers are kind of getting around the fact that the cider gets so highly taxed, so nobody wants to make cider up in Alaska because of that. I mean, it's 60 cents versus like $1.35 or something like that for cider. So they're doing an apple ale.
Hmm.
And, you know, that way you kind of get the palate. But that state is just dying to make cider.
But it
blocks it. It's just kind of blocking growth. So it's a good movement forward to get.
You know, we feel like, and we've kind of demonstrated to some folks that that are in Congress that are considering passing this, and there's quite a few people that are for it. There's very little opposition. We feel like the actual loss in revenue will be gained in the growth of the category,
mm-hmm.
and then some.
Absolutely.
And so it's not something that we're really, you know, taking revenue away.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really raising a tax. We're not doing anything so it's kind of nonpartisan, you know, very easy thing to get through, and we're hoping that it gets voted on before the end of the year.
That's exciting. So I'd like to talk about the fact that you're calling it cider. You're not calling it Hard Cider Act. You're calling it Cider Act. And what I see, and I'm sure you probably see, is all this terminology. There's all these different descriptors, and it's kind of a little bit confusing. I even see that in the association. You have some association members giving speeches, and it's called cider making, one word, and then cider making, two words, and then cider master or cider maker. Now, in wine, we have wine making. It's all one word. Brewmaster is one word.
I think spell check won't let you do one word.
Well, we want spell check to like define that for us.
Spell check needs to make it
change. If you look in the dictionary, it's actually cider making. So
that's a really good point.
It's an interesting thing, and as somebody who is a real enthusiast about cider, it concerns me just a little bit. And since I'm talking to a board member, just concerns me that if we not standardizing, but having clarity, because there's a confusion. A lot of people think cider is sweet cider.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have different, if you're in France, it's spelled a little bit differently. If you're in Spain, it's sidra, you know. So, but in the U.S., most people associate it as hard cider. And I personally, from my vantage, I think hard cider, well, that's what folks might say, but it gives it kind of an edge. I don't even know, like, hard. It's just a little like, I'm not sure if that's how we want to go there. And I like the term cider. So is that something in the conversation and in the Cider Act? Because these definitions are really critical as the industry of cider making is going forward. I know you call yourself a cider master,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yes.
And that's actually a term that you don't hear too much. It's a nice term. I like it because it's like brewmaster. I like that. It's a great term, cider master. I really dig that. So is there ever a conversation, because this is something I'm going to keep on continually kind of bringing up in cider chat with different cider masters and cider makers. What are your thoughts on that, David?
Well, we're kind of making an attempt to take care of some of those issues. You know, and I do call it cider, and the United States is the only country in the world that doesn't call it just cider.
That's true.
And that really got to blame Prohibition again. You know, because, you know, a lot of people would go and they would get cider, you know, at the same time they got their Christmas tree.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the juice, and then maybe they would let it ferment and mm-hmm. go from there. And
mm-hmm.
Anyway,
he's a busy guy. What can I say?
I'm sorry about that. So what we're doing as an association is I was tasked with being the committee chair to create a similar program to the Cicerone and Sommelier programs for cider. And so we will be launching the Cider Expert Certification Program in February at CiderCon in Portland. And there'll be different levels that you can achieve. And
let's just talk about the levels. You have a first, a second, and a master level.
That's correct.
Right? Yeah.
But we're also, you know, because we're brand new here, so we're just getting going.
Yeah.
So, but we also want to have an online, so it'll really start with the online at the lowest level.
Oh, nice.
And then work its way up from mm-hmm. the introductory, mm-hmm. the middle one, and then the master.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we haven't even named them all yet. So it's really in the forming stages. But that's what we want to do, and we're going to be launching that. So that'll hopefully be the beginning of standardizing a lot of the terminology that mm-hmm. you know that we want to bring a consensus around in the United States from the industry itself. If we, you know, and so, you know, obviously my personal opinion is that we should always refer to it as cider. We should forget about hard cider. It doesn't matter. Let's join the rest of the world. I think cider maker should be one word, just like winemaker is. So that's, you know, I mean, I'm on the same page. I mean, that's what we need to be doing. And, you know, it hasn't been something that we've discussed at the board level just because we got so many other things we're trying to just get dealt with, like the Cider Act. But, you know, why not?
This is a critical piece. It's a really critical piece, because that education and really clarifying the role is certainly, if you're doing this like Cicerone program, but you don't call it Cicerone.
No.
So let's just talk about that.
No, it's not. Yeah.
So can we just talk about that word that you're choosing for the program?
Well, we were going to use a word, and but we've backed off of that. We were talking about calling it Cicero. And if you look at the Latin term Cicero, it does refer to cider. The literal translation is strong drink, but it in history, if you research it, it is referring to cider. And so it's sort of interesting that the Cicerone folks chose that term to describe their beer program. But they're so established, and they've been doing it for so many years, and they've done such a fantastic job with it, that we didn't want any confusion. And so we kind of backed off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, and you know, we kicked around all kinds of really, really fun names. But at the end of the day, we just decided to call it, you know, Cider Expert Certification.
Well, that's pretty clear and concise.
It's easy. You know?
that works sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, it's easy to Google, and people can figure it out, and you can get to the site, and, you know, it's like, so that's what we've decided to call it.
Well, that's a step in the right direction, and I think that will help the trade overall and for the public who really enjoys cider to have that kind of clarity, I do believe is a necessary point of review for the association and for new and up and coming cider makers to look at that when they're doing their labeling, and so that we have some kind of clarity in the market will be important.
Agreed.
I don't have a problem with hard cider. I'm sure that you don't either. It's just it does kind of confuse things because people don't know that. And I know when folks come up to me as a cider maker, and I have to say, back when I was first teaching cider making, we would literally lock the door and not let people out and say, you have to learn how to make cider, because nobody wanted it. They were just going in. And I always kind of try to clarify sweet cider. Now those same workshops you're paying money for. So it's kind of fun to see the upswell.
Well, you know, when I was selling an imported cider back in like 1990. And at that time, really, the only place you could find hard cider was in English and Irish pubs.
Yeah.
And people, and so, you know, people constantly would ask me, well, is it apple juice? I mean, what? I mean, mm-hmm. There was a mm-hmm. lot of confusion back in those early yeah. days. Now, fortunately, that's going away, mm-hmm. and I think we can help that by standardizing the term, what we call it. I mean, right. let's at least agree on what we call it, right?
Right, so. Absolutely, absolutely. And I think we have to thank the craft beer industry in many ways for getting people into that artisanal, like slow food, and really beautiful crafted libation like cider or beer or the wine industry. It all goes hand in hand. We're lucky. It's a lucky time to be in.
Yeah.
So
fantastic.
Yeah. How would folks find out about Sonoma Cider? What are some of the social media things, if I could just ask you? You got a beautiful website to look at.
Thank you. We do a lot of our day-to-day stuff on Facebook, mm-hmm. so Sonoma Cider. We do pretty much a daily post, just because we've got kind of a lot of wacky things going on that we like to talk about.
Those Imperials and
yep.
whatever it's coming out.
So, our web page is one way to find out about us, but I would say probably the best outlet is Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Great.
We're going to be starting a cider club. And when we get our tap room open, our new tap room open in the first quarter of next year,
mm-hmm.
and we're kind of excited about that. So
that's more for local folks.
No, it's for anybody.
So what does that mean, the cider club?
Well, there, you'll have advantages to what you can get when you come into the tap room, which is normal for local, but for people that aren't local, there'll be offerings that are only offered to the cider club folks, small production runs that are
nice.
Not sold in stores. Mm-hmm. And possibly some different benefits that go along with club membership.
That's great. That's really great.
One of the things we're doing in our tap room and that we've been aligning with ever since we started was comedy. And so we've had a couple of comedy festivals.
Comedy, okay.
We love.
I heard that right.
My son and I love comedy.
Awesome.
And so, and he grew up with a good friend of his that's a comedian. And so we just started doing comedy festivals, and it's just something we want to continue. So when we get our tap room open, there'll be a little more room, so we don't have to do it in the warehouse. We can do it in the tap room.
Well, that lends itself to you have to have a good cider joke.
Definitely.
Do you have any jokes about cider?
No, but I'll come up with one. I've got a couple that are not fit for public consumption.
Well, this is an explicit podcast. It is under the title, so iTunes and all that will have no problem, but... maybe the funniest one is the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. That's kind of a joke for a lot of families, but I'm sure there's going to be some better ones.
Oh, there are. And we'll work on that. I'll get back to you on those.
Oh, please do. I love that idea of comedy. Well, great. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to Ciderville, people on Cider Chat listening to this, and really wish you continued success with your both the Cider Act, the association, and certainly Sonoma Cider. You have a great product, and it's all in the taste, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's the message has got to be in the bottle.
Lovely.
Yeah. Thanks, Rhea, very much. I really appreciate your time and talking to me and about all the things that are going on in the cider world in the United States. And you're all your listeners are welcome to come visit us in Healdsburg, and for you especially, you're always welcome.
Yeah. Good time. Good time. Always a good time to go out to California.
For sure.
I'd like to thank David Cords once again for taking the time to chat with me and telling us so many interesting tidbits there about his ciders and Sonoma Cider's profile. Pretty interesting, especially that whole bourbon thing that they're doing there and creating those flavors. Very innovative, and I know we're going to see increasingly amazing ciders coming out of that particular cidery. And if you get a chance, definitely check out some of the links on the show notes that are going to bring you to the U.S. Cider Maker Association, the CiderCon, and of course, Sonoma Cider itself. Now, next week, we have a pretty amazing episode. It's going to be from Quebec, And I haven't had any Canadian cider makers yet, but this particular group of gentlemen I had a blast with. So you'll find out more about them next week. I have a little bit difficulty with my French, even though I had it in high school. I kind of get my Spanish and my French mixed up all these years later, and now I speak a wee bit of Dutch. So I'm going to take a little bit of help from one of the cider makers at this particular cidery in Quebec to pronounce a name. And this is Benoit Gosselin, pronouncing the cidery in Quebec that I'll be chatting with next week. Thank you, Benoit. Here we go.
Les Vergers de la Colline.
Of course, I'll have the spelling for that cidery on the website. And really, that's going to be a really fun interview. So make sure that you subscribe so you don't miss that episode or any subsequent episodes as we move along here into Ciderville. Now we're rolling into December, and the show goes live on Wednesday, so it's going to go live tomorrow, which will be December 2nd. Wow. And that means that there's lots of amazing gifts that you get, folks, for cider makers. So I'll have some ideas for you in the next two episodes that you could think about. Certainly any of the cider makers that I have spoken with, their ciders are available in some of the countries, not all the countries. That's just the way it rolls at this point. But you can look back at different episodes and, you know, that there's nothing better than bringing a bottle of cider to a holiday party or gifting a friend a little gift certificate to get something like that and getting folks informed about cider. I know a lot of people like Rick, who wrote earlier from Florida, they're just starting to get into cider. And so any cider maker taking note of this should really think about, you know, how are you extending to the consumer and letting them know what your offerings are? You could think about it in this way. We're just beginning to make cider the rock star that it is in the U.S. It might seem like we're like propelling forward, but to maintain that, we have to keep on educating consumers and ourselves on how to connect. And a great way I've found to connect is really to connect on social media and the whole cider world. You don't feel like you get bombarded. Of course, I love Facebook, and Cider Chat does have a Facebook page, and that's a great place to go to. But Twitter, I have found, has been a wonderful forum for connecting with people. There's all these conversations that I almost get into daily, and the nice thing about tweets is that they kind of come and go, and you could kind of follow different threads. I tweet a lot with Rebel Seed Cider in Delaware. I always like to see what at Drinking Cider is putting out on Twitter, and that's Ronald, and he's also a craft beer libation writer, and he puts out a lot of great things there, you know, so there'll be a little link to his Twitter feed. I just did a little conversation with New Scotland Cider, and that's a new cidery up in Nova Scotia, up in Canada. And I was just kind of curious, you know, what's going on with the apples up there? And got a nice reply about what they're doing. And then just yesterday with At Real Cider Review, that's Hugh, we were kind of going back and forth on growlers and the crawlers or the growlets, you know, the different things, the vessels that you carry things in and what they call them in Australia, I guess. And so I asked them, you know, what do you call it in Australia? And they say a squealer. And I said, geez, there must be a story behind that. And he said, yep. He goes, yeah, a big boar hog growls, a piglet squeals. Someone who gets drunk easily is also known as squealer. I thought that was kind of cute. I'm going to put that in the show notes to this episode because I thought that was so cute. But the point of this is that Twitter is a great place to connect, and certainly connect with me at Cider Chat. That's where we'll be going back and forth in conversation. So if you do, make a shout out and say, hey, you're listening to Cider Chat podcast. And I'd love to hear from you there. All right, so lots to do. It's a busy month, and I'm going to be rolling out of here. I think it's time. This is A Real Wind Caller signing off for now. I'll look forward to grabbing a glass and sharing a chat with you and seeing you soon in Ciderville.